Nehmen wir eine kleine Hühnerei. Nun das Wetter.
Kam es denn für...
Oh, ist das lecker.
Küchenfunk.
Herzlich willkommen zur 251. Folge Küchenfunk. Mein Name ist Christian von Küchenjunge.com und ich habe euch ja versprochen, dass wir eine kleine Spezialfolge hier im Podcast haben werden, wo wir aus der Flandernreise ein paar Interviews, die ich mitgeschnitten habe, von unseren Rundgängen veröffentlichen wollen. Und somit habe ich zum einen einmal aus Westfleteren einen kleinen Mitschnitt mitgebracht. Das ist vom Yves Panel, der macht die PR-Arbeit für Westfleteren, für das Kloster. Und er kennt sich wahnsinnig gut damit aus. Das sind die Mönche sieht man halt kaum, die machen halt selber kaum PR oder wir konnten sie leider auch nicht treffen, weil es natürlich ein Sonntag war und ein Sonntag ist ein besonderer Tag in Klostern. Und deswegen, ja, konnten wir leider keinen Mönch treffen, aber er hat wunderschön erzählt. Leider ist das Interview nicht so richtig lang geworden. Ich glaube, es sind nur so 10 Minuten und geht dann auch eher auf die Historie ein bisschen zurück. Ich finde einfach sehr schön, wie er erzählt hat. Beide Interviews sind übrigens in Englisch. Da könnt ihr euch gleich mal ein bisschen euer Englisch aufpolieren. Wie gesagt, wir fangen an mit Westfleteren. Kleiner Exkurs. Ich habe in den Shownotes noch ein paar Informationen auf der Internetseite verlinkt, wenn da jemand noch weiter eintauchen möchte. Wie gesagt, da hätte ich echt gern gehabt, dass wir noch ein bisschen mehr Interview hätten, was ich euch zeigen könnte. Aber dann ging es halt mit Essen weiter und ja, Essgeräusche sind dann auch nicht so schön. Und ich habe es dann auch leider nicht mehr aufgenommen. Deswegen, ja, das Interview ist ein bisschen kurz gekommen. Und danach schalten wir direkt zu Hendrik Dierendong, wie wir durch seine Fleischproduktion gegangen sind. Da führt er uns durch. Und ja, eigentlich dachte ich, wie ich es am Handy gehört habe, die Sprache ist gut, du hast wenig Rauschen drin, also ich habe es direkt an seinen Hals quasi das Mikrofon gemacht, das sollte eigentlich recht gut funktionieren. Das Rauschen, finde ich, hat man gar nicht gehört, was so drumherum war. Ich hoffe, man versteht alle Fragen. Wie gesagt, diese Folge hier ist ja wirklich ein kleines Goodie, direkt schon eine Woche später veröffentlicht aus unserem Turnus. Das heißt, ich hoffe, sie gefällt euch. Ihr könnt euch ein bisschen wiederfinden in der Reise oder auch in diesen Führungen. Wenn ihr jetzt die Bilder nicht unbedingt vor Augen habt, guckt gerne bei uns auf Instagram. Da gibt es die Highlights, genau bei Martin ja auch immer eine sehr schöne Fotoserie. Wenn man da mal rein skippen möchte und ein paar Bilder sehen möchte, kann man da auf jeden Fall drauf gehen. Ich hoffe, ihr habt viel Spaß und dann schalten wir jetzt nach Westfleteren.
So the first monks settled here in 1831, and in 1838, according to the register, the first material was bought to brew beer. And they got their brewing license, their official brewing license, from the king himself in 1839. Why was it from the king himself? Because it was close to the border. And if you were close to the border, you had to have a special special permit. So they got a brewing permit in 1839. In the beginning, they were brewing only for themselves and for the people who were working for the abbey. For instance, the masons, when they were building the abbey, made us got this sniffer here. The masons, and the people who were working for the abbey, who were doing construction work, sometimes they were paid in beer in those days. But for a long time, they were brewing for themselves. And then from 1860, they have set up a second brewery. In 1928, they were using for the first time a steam engine for the brewery, and then and the last now it's already the fourth brewery that they're using. So they're using this brewery since the 1990s.
They use four now, or it's the fourth that they use?
It's the fourth. The others have disappeared.
Oh, okay.
For a long time, they were using a cool ship. I don't know if you're familiar with the cool ship. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
serious
beer people, they know cool ships. the beer in the old days was sour and had to be additionally sweetened. Now, at the end of the 1960s and the 1970s, we had some witnesses still who were telling us that there were quality problems at that time with the beer. The beer was sour, probably, and wasn't good. So sometimes they were delivering, but they had to take back more beer than they had taken, because for the previous delivery, people gave the beer back because they said it's not good. So what was the reason? Probably because they didn't know at the time as much about hygiene and food safety as we know now. So they in the 1970s, they called in the help of Brother Thomas of the Abbey of Westmalle, and other Trappist Trappist Abbey and brewery.
Yep.
And he came here and he saw that there was a big problem. But he said to the monks here, well, it's only minor changes. But in fact, it was a complete re-engineering of the brewing process that he set up. And he solved the quality problems, but he also laid the basis for the world-renowned quality that Westfateren has now. So basically, the beers that we are drinking now, they are all made with the yeast of Westmalle.
Okay.
Before 1976, the monks were using yeasts from neighboring breweries or yeast that they had harvested themselves.
Mm.
But there is nothing like a real St. Sixtus yeast. It doesn't exist. For instance, during the war, we found a document from 1942. During the Second World War, there was a shortage of food and grain. So the monks were only able, during the Second World War, to brew a very light beer, the so-called number four. But they could only brew it once every 3 weeks, because there was not enough grain available. Now, if you brew only every 3 weeks, they didn't have any yeast propagator in those times yet. So what did the breweries in the region agree? That they were going to pass on yeast. When someone had made a beer, he was passing on the yeast to the next one, and so on and so on. So there must be, at the end of the Second World War, there must be a great yeast mixture that were used by all the breweries here in the region. So what is specifically with St. Sixtus? This is the old brewery, the one that was I've been using from 1928 onwards. But what is really special about the beers of Westfleteren? So when they have boiled the wort and when they have cooled it down, they let it ferment in open vessels.
Yeah.
They're quite big. And once the fermentation starts, you have to be careful when you enter this building because you would faint because there's no oxygen, there's only CO2.
CO2.
So the beer stays here about 1 week. And then it's pumped into lager tanks. And the lager tanks will have a, you know, it will continue, the fermentation will can continue, but it will also clear out. And there the beer stays about 5 to 12 weeks, depending on the type.
It's really long. 5 to 12 weeks,
depending on the type of beer, because they have three types of beer. They have the blondes, the 8 and the 12. These two are dark, this one is a blonde beer. But sometimes for the darker beers, it takes a longer time. The monks only release the beer when it's really ready. So, stays in here 1 week, then it goes to the lager tanks for 5 to 12 weeks. And then another, at least another 2 weeks, fermentation on the bottle in the warehouse. So then they put it at a certain temperature and then there is a fermentation on the bottle. And when Brother Joris is saying now it's ready to be released, then it will be sold, not earlier. So there is no pressure from them, or they're not cutting any corners. They are making this beer with the recipe from 1976 from Brother Thomas, still nowadays, and they are sticking to their tradition.
When he make the bottle fermentation, that's I think it's looking for the CO2 in the bottle, or when you have the fermentation, you don't put extra. That is one of the quality points.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So when the cool ship disappeared, they are closing a closed wort cooler. So the cool ship is no longer. The first time when I visited here, and they showed me the old brewery, I was surprised because I didn't know that they had a cool ship. I come from a region where cool ships are very common. I come from the region from the Geuze and the Lambic, so but here in this region, it was the first time that that's the chef. What would you like to eat? You want a meat and cheese platter, or you want to have bread with? They have different kinds of meat available, which are traditional here from the region. Or they have the suggestions, of course. So they have steak, they have burger with monk's cheese, with abbey cheese.
That sounds good. Burger with abbey cheese?
But it's not the cheese from...
No, abbey.
Yeah, yeah. They also have pig's cheeks with Westfleteren.
Yeah? That's mine. in beer. I love it. And one thing I don't...
Well, if you go home, are you all...
I cannot come to here if you are busy.
No.
Now, what do you like? Speak English is okay?
Yeah. What would you like to drink?
Ja, und bei der Frage, wo es ums Trinken geht, habe ich dann leider abgeschaltet, aber... Wir haben es ja bei Martin in der letzten Folge auch schon groß besprochen, wie das mit den Bieren war, wo die Besonderheiten lagen. Genau das findet ihr, wie gesagt, in der alten Folge. Und jetzt würde ich sagen, schalten wir zurück nach Wörne zum Hendrik Dierendonck und mit seinem Gang durch die Metzgerei und schauen einfach mal, was er uns da so über seine Metzgerei zu erzählen hat, wie die Reiferäume sind, was mit seinem Fleisch ist. Und ich denke mal, das ist auch sehr interessant, auch wieder in Englisch, und ich wünsche euch viel Spaß.
So I'll give you a little explanation how the tour work, how we work. So here all the meats, the naked meat, it comes in. So here is all the naked meat, we hang it up. We make the selection, we put it in the, we make the traceability, everything on it, and then we start maturing, let's say. Meat is starting to mature from the moment it's killed. So from the moment it is slaughtered, you start maturing. Let's say, you will see now, of course, the big cuts, because the animals, they come in on Monday again, we don't have much. So what it is, we have a reception refrigerator. First, I had only pork there and beef. But what I saw that the moment pork comes in, you cut it up straight away and you try to sell it to the shops. So we made this a reception refrigerator. So you see it's a bit empty, it's Saturday. So these are bags from a West Flemish cow. Normally the pistolas, we let them hang for about 10 days. We have some lamb, we have some, as I said, there's not so much anymore. But normally, like let's say, when the meat goes out here, you have to say it's about 7 to 10 days old, the beef. What do? We get the fillet off, we get the loin off, we hang it up, and then it goes next off here. So we see next off here, there's a slow ventilation, it's pretty cold, it's humidity. This is the first 7 to 10 days, the meat is just slaughtered like this. Then we go next off here.
And it's possible to mix meats here, so you have
lamb. Yes,
and
this is a refrigerator, a reception refrigerator. You can mix. Of course, you cannot hang it over one another, but it's like I said, my pork. They don't make an argument in the beginning. I wanted to separate it, but as it is a reception refrigerator, they allow it. But then afterwards, we separate it. But you will see next. So this is the first step of the maturing part. The next step is on the second one here. You will see. So here, they've been cutting up yesterday very much. So because yesterday you see all those loins were still full, so they cut it up, and we have a rolling moment all the time. You see here, ventilation is normally a bit slower. We put this one from time to time, but we have also UV lamps, and the UV lamps make your maturing process is very natural. So what we do, we mature the meat here until it's about 21 to 28 days. Then these loins, as you see here, you see, Monday they call up all the bone this. They're gonna start cutting that up. They're gonna clean it up. These are the loins, and we make the selection on the loins. Marbling, no marbling. We always have about 15 breeds here. But you see for the moment, like this, these are Normandy cows, as you ate yesterday, some Aubrac, Salers. We all have the different maturing process, and this is the selection of the Utsla. Utsla, like you also tasted yesterday, is an older maturing process, and the idea of it is to mature the meat as a cheese. So we play with temperature, ventilation, and humidity all the time. So you will see that, like now, it's a slow ventilation, UV lamps, and here really starts, let's say, the fermentation process. Yeah. You smell it, you smell a matured meat, but not rotten meat, that's very important, yeah. And here on the Utslag, we also always select the older cows, a bit more fatty, yellow fat, it's more, the meat can really stand it. But we'll take some pieces also. So you have the Bavière, we have Holsteiners, we have the West Flemish one, the West Flemish. Our own breed is not so marbled. It's typically that come from us.
Okay.
Yeah. The Utslas, the normal meat we get out of here about after 21 to 28 days. The Utslag meat stays here until it's 5 weeks, and then we cut it up. We lay it down in a second refrigerator. Every piece of meat goes into three different refrigerators. It starts when it's slaughtered. Next off here, then it comes here hanging, and then we cut it up and we lay it on racks. So maturing hanging or maturing on racks is different maturing process.
Okay.
Okay,
when you're hanging, it's called
the moisture goes down. But for us also, it's very important when you see an animal had stress, like you would see when it comes in.
Okay.
and there's water underneath it, it means that the animal had stress or the feeding was not good. Because an animal that had stress, it will be very humid, a lot of water in it, because the pH is so high.
You can see it.
Yeah, you can see it, totally.
Okay, it's one of your qualitation process.
Yeah.
When you see it, okay, I have many water outside. It's not the best part for the restaurant.
No, you cannot. You can mature it. No. We make the selection when it comes in. The how old the animal is. So you look at, you see this. This is not. This is a bit more older. You see, don't have any cracklings here. So you see, it's an older animal.
Okay.
If you have the cracklings, it means it's 2 years, 3 years old. When you don't have So next selection. So we make selection on the marbling, on the fat. Then you make a selection also on the loin here, if it's nicely fattened up. We always want the animals to be on the outside for about, we fatten them up for, let's say, about 3 months. We finish them.
Why do you want the humidity to go down to this part?
No. It's just the maturing process is just different. It's I cannot say how it comes. We're now going to test with the university where we have a project going on now. We have two refrigerators, and the two loins from one same animal we mature on a different process to taste it and see what it happens.
Okay.
Because it's. This is like, let's say, this is a process I created in the old shop from where we were yesterday, and I came here, and there was chef saying to me, my clients, they said, Hendrik, your meat is not the same anymore. I said, damn, I have a new production plant, what I'm gonna do? And we started making log books with the maturing process there, and we put it over here because there is freon, here is CO2, so the humidity was totally different. So I had to put UV lamps. I had to put heaters in the fridge to get the same process. You will see the next one is even more different. Yeah, yeah. Because the other one, so yesterday they cut up a lot and they put it on the racks. So that's a bit the Friday work. Then we always have the flow. To be good, we always, let's say in high season, we have about 1,000 loins maturing all the time.
Thomas, you have two maturing processes after another, or is it two different meats?
It's different. No, it's
Oh, you first put it here and then in the racks.
Yeah. It's, you need to go over it.
So it's another step.
It's another step. You will see the other one, because the other one is the most important one, the next one. What is very important also for me is that the meat is not too hard. So you see, it's always a bit, even these ones, they never can be too hard. So I don't want a dry aging like in America. I want the meat to mature at ease. So it's a process, because when you have, like in America or in England, they put big blasters on it to dry. The outside is like a crude. I don't want it. I still want it to breathe. So these ones gonna be almost ready. Yeah. I always put also a little bit of apples with whiskey.
Okay.
Yeah, and I let it rotten. It's good it's a nice touch. I learned it from an old Scottish guy.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you let the apples, you let them rotten. Apples with wood and whiskey, and we let them rotten, and then it's a nutty flavor.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's also the cultures of the bacteria.
I don't know what it makes. I started with it a long time ago with the apples, and you notice also when you mature meat and you do whiskey on it, it's a combination that works very well.
Yep.
So you put in a towel, and then every day you do a bit of whiskey on it.
Yep.
It's a very nice flavor combination, and we notice that. So the apple with the whiskey gives it a nice flavor. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Best Flemish meat comes from your own farm, or?
We have a few coming from our farm, but we buy with 5 to 6 farmers in the area.
Okay.
No, we are hobby farmers.
Yeah. Okay.
We have 40 animals, 50, depending, and you will see it's a hobby. Yeah. So you see, normally, so we are not on the side. Meat comes out here. They put it on the tables. So when we debone. They also is one on the table here, deboning, puts it on. Two people are there, so it's a flow that they make. So here, like now, they have cut up the loins. Now we have the third refrigerator. The third refrigerator is, we're gonna build a new one because it's sometimes a bit small, and this is the most important one. So,
Hello, babies.
So this this process here is a cycle of 48 hours. And every 2-3 hours, temperature changes here. Temperature, ventilation, and humidity. So now it's cold here, I feel it. The ventilation is slow, UV lamps are working, but maybe in half an hour, in 2 hours, temperature is gonna go into 12 degrees. So we go between 12, 13 degrees and 0 degrees all the time. So the fibers, they live, let's say, it heats up, they soften up. You see now they're changing the ventilation. And because it's like a fermentation process that you improve or how do you call it? I don't know. You steer it or how you call it? You control your own system, let's say. Yeah. Because it goes out, it gets humidity, the fibers work. I made my own taste of it, so. Yeah.
And you, the system you create on your own.
Yes. Yes. I let's say it's what I called. I said before, when I moved in here, there were chefs that worked with me. Three Michelin star chef, very good friend, Sergio Herman. He said, "Hendrik, your meat is not the same anymore." I said, "Shit, what I'm gonna do now?" And so I started making the lagers, and then we started experimenting even more. So with temperature and humidity, I'm planting now. We're doing test rooms on the other side now. But I want to create another refrigerator, so I could put meat from young animals and older animals in different refrigerators. You see that an animal that ate cereals or an animal that ate only grass is another collagen. So the texture is differently from eating other food. I always say meat. It's like a wine or a cheese. You have the breed that is grape. What kind of grape you use? You have the terroir. This is what the animal eats. You have the stress factor. For wine is the sun. It's the same. An animal that's inside or outside. You have the alcohol in wine. You have the marbling in the beef. So you have to approach it totally differently then, and then you start thinking, how can I mature it? And I think not every kind of meat has to be matured on the same way. So you see the flavor, you create another flavor. Yeah, yeah.
And what was the process in your old butchery that you have this temperature go up and down?
Yeah, how it was created. Let's say I had small refrigerators. Yeah, door went open, you go in 5 times a day. It was hanging, it comes into the first refrigerator, then the second one. So we also had 3 different refrigerators, but we had created something without knowing it.
So okay, and now you recreate it here with the system.
Yeah, so now we create it. Because, you know, in the beginning, my father, he had an old maturing room. He just had refrigerators, and it was in wood, cork, and cement. So in the 70s, 80s, he bought W cows. It was normal. Then these kind of refrigerators came. So animals, they had to be bigger, and we have to cut them as fast as possible so we didn't have any waste of money. So the humidity, drying means waste, so it's less money. So I restarted the maturing process with older animals. So, yeah. I don't know if we have pork here now also, but I only have two now, you see. I also brought one. I have one like this also for you guys later, one that's matured for about 3 weeks. And this panel is because upstairs there is a heater, and otherwise the heat falls too much on the meat, so it's protected a little bit, so it goes up from time to time. And sometimes it's strange. You have to. It's like with cheese. Every day with cheese, they move it a little bit. It's sometimes strange. Just moving it a little bit makes another maturing process.
And how many? You not only sell this in your own restaurants, too much.
No. We have the 5 shops, and then as I said, we have about 50 restaurants. But depending, not all take beef only.
And now we started with the shop in the premium retail partner. So we just started it up. I wanted to do more shops, but the difficulty is staff. So I have own
shops.
Yeah. I have 5 shops and I wanted to do 10 in total. But my wife, she said we have too much problem with staff. We don't find butchers anymore. And so then the question is what we're going to do. So we have also clients asking for it. And I just started now to work with a premium retail partner. So we have about 25 retailers, supermarkets, high-end supermarkets. We have a sort of shop-in-shop pre-packed.
Yeah.
And I was in the beginning, I was scared to do that because I'm an old-school butcher. You say, yeah, supermarket. But we see a lot of clients that say, hey, it's fantastic. Now we can buy your meat. So it's nice to hear also. So
you also have the problem to give away some of your control about the meat?
Well, I did it before, like I said, but now I do more. I select it here. I cut it up. I pack it. And we see that it's more control for me. So it's, as you said, I always say in a restaurant, you go eating to a restaurant. And you're in a restaurant for 2-3 hours. And the chef prepares the meat. I always say the moment the meat is gone, is with the client, I have no control anymore. Because I can have the best steak, at home people can fuck it up, let's say. So it's so sometimes, there was a guy, he always comes to my shop, he said, yeah, I buy big pieces of meat. He always buy big pieces. Yeah. He invited me at his home. And then he started cooking with not good butter, but like, they say shit. It changes the meat, so it's such a waste. It's a pity.
Yeah.
So, but it's with chefs also like that. So, no, but
one second. The fridge.
So when we cut up here, the pieces that are ready, they go to the picking. Pieces for burgers, minced meats, sausages goes in the waiting refrigerator, and then it goes to the other to the kitchen. To the charcuterie making and to the burger meat. We always have a staff starting at 10 o'clock at night. So like in week time, like Sunday night, they start at 10. Mm-hmm. So at 5 o'clock in the morning, everything is ready and they go to all the shops. Wow. Yeah. It's starting up again every day. But you see, like now this is like the process. Huh? You see, it's now cooling UV lamp circulation. So it's 4.3 degrees, 71 humidity. The ventilation is now not on it, so it's current. It's still 15 minutes, 16 minutes like this, and then the next one is going to heat up for the warmen. So it's a process coming back again. So it goes up and down, and now we have two refrigerators coming up there, just in the back, for testing with the university. We do a special project. Yeah.
One question about the UV. You're just using it for the airstream, not
the UV
on the meat, like
the UV is. Especially to disinfect, because you have less of moisture. If I don't put UV lamps, there's much more moisture in it. And it comes
using it at the fan, right next to the fan.
Yes, because why? It goes in, the moment it sucks up the air passes on the UV lamps, and the inside of your cooler stays more clean. Because that's the place where there's a lot of moisture, and then it blows out all the moisture on the meat again. It comes from, I saw it about 12 years ago in the cheese industry, a guy did the cheese in Holland. I said, yeah, I'm going to try it in my refrigerator then at home. And I put it just in the refrigerator for the kitchen. And you see when you put a sauce and you put UV lamps, the sauce, it stays three to 4 days longer good. It's strange. So because it's like what I do also, like they have... In the meat industry or disinfection industry, they put the meat under your lamp to disinfect the outside. I didn't know it before, but we see that. I think the maturing process is much more natural. I don't, as I said, it's my process. It's what I like to taste, and maybe somebody else does it differently. So that I think it's like maturing cheese or affinage, the fromage. Everybody has his own. Secret over his own taste, and I have created mine, so that's a bit the idea behind it, I guess. Huh?
But it's you say it's a nature process?
Natural? Yeah.
But with UV lamps, it's the natural.
But I don't say it's a natural process. I say for me, the flavor is more natural.
Okay.
I I hate it when the meat, like the utslah you eat yesterday, it's about 7 to 8 weeks, but it's still meat you eat. I don't like because I've been eating also when I was young meat of 180 or 250 days. Yeah, it's not meat anymore; it's cheese. And there's people saying, yeah, okay. when you it's like cheese. Yeah. When I want to eat cheese, I buy cheese.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's a bit of waste. Of course, it's typically exploring when you're young. You do more. Your frontiers. You go further and further and further. And I noticed since I was 40, I came back to the natural taste. So. It's a process. A chef has it also. You see young chefs, they do experiment, and then they go back to the basics. And it's good to have the best of both worlds, yeah. I think. Yeah, yeah.
Easy but great.
Yeah, yeah. But and still, you have to innovate, so you have to try things, so it's not bad. So this is a bit our kitchen. You see, this is a hot kitchen. Don't mind this is production. The meat, but they're installing a new cutter. They're installing a new. Just bought a new mincer also, so it's a bit yeah. They work at night here from 10 to 5. Then at 5 o'clock the charcuterie, the guys that make charcuterie and the terrines and the boudin blanc, the weisswurst, they start then. So it's by day and night, and then at 5 o'clock somebody comes cleaning. Weekends of course. It's all a bit. And here is the cooking. I'll show you the. I don't know. What we do a lot also is like with the crémeux that you saw yesterday. There's the dried entrecote.
Yep.
On the blade.
Yep.
Eh? Yep. So it's like the loins from there that you see 3 weeks, 4 weeks matured. We debone it, we clean it up, and we put it in the salt. But that's not, I don't think they're here now. No. This is for salting and this tumbling.
Yeah.
But we put it in the salt for about 1 month, and then we dry it again, and it goes to the climatization room. So this is the dried entrecote. We make the entrecote like we ate yesterday. Then this is the coppa of beef. And then we also have coppa of beef that's older. So these are they selected these ones. They're gonna pack it on Monday, so they're ready to. They're gonna clean it up, cut it up, and then pack it for the clients. This is the nutty flavor. It comes in. So this is not so matured. This is the neck. We don't mature it as much as the dried entrecote. We had a lot of clients. They said we matured these necks for about 2 weeks. We had a lot of clients. They say it's very expensive. The loins. So we started making it with the neck, so it's the nutty flavor comes into it. So it's something that works out good. Yeah. I put it back in the fridge, eh? Wait. Take the picture here.
You're getting us hungry again.
Ah, yeah, but that's the point, and that's the idea. Yeah. So that's a little bit what we do. And then the idea is when we make charcuterie and meals, then it goes there, we go packing it, it's a packaging room. And then it goes to the picking. I always made the doors, even by day, when somebody comes in, clients, they always can come see by day, because then they don't have to interfere with the production. And I have a lot of clients, like you guys now, you come to Carcas, but I have clients, they call us and they say, yeah, we're coming over with 5 friends, can we pass by in the production? I say, no problem. They come pass by here and then they cook with Carcas. Everybody's always welcome. I always give a tour. Yeah. So and then it comes all to the picking at the end. And from here we do the distribution. So these are these are the loins. So these are the loins that's pre-packed. The matured pieces we put in socks. We don't put in vacuum.
Okay.
This is only 3 weeks matured, 2 to 3 weeks matured. But all the ribs we don't put in vacuum. They're always
good. Socks?
It's like a stockinette.
Yeah,
stockinette. It's not a vacuum pack. The moment you put vacuum, I don't like it too much.
Yeah,
don't like it. There comes an acidity on it.
Oh.
Too much. So this is a bit the fresh meat. Then this is like the prepared meals. Then we have charcuterie. So Schinken, terrines, the pâté that you ate yesterday.
See? I love this. Eh? It was so great, this potato.
Wow. I started it 2 years ago to making, and now in wintertime it's a product that's really, we have three kinds. So now I only make one for summer, but I really make one with foie gras and duck, and then canard à l'orange, and then with deer also in the...
What was this one?
This is jelly. What you do when you cook it, and then you cook, it shrinks, and then you like a good bouillon, you make a gelatin and you fill it up with it.
What is it? Is it also?
It's made from bones, the bones that we cook and.
Calf.
With calf und geflügelte.
The both. The taste was so.
It's not like veal only. Yeah? It's and not like chicken also. It's a bit heavier. But it's because you're. It's because of the Maillard reaction that you make in the
pan.
Always. Then, what is a prepared meal? Then is it here we prepare for wrap shop. So every morning they fill it up. Then the guys, but we should create another refrigerator. Sometimes it's too small. So this with all the small things. I think I prepared one like this. That's a bit the rest. So you can see the and the new packaging is in the other refrigerator. So there's let's say almost everything is homemade. I have one like this also. I don't know if you didn't taste it yesterday, eh? The boudin? No.
We have tomorrow open or it's closed?
The shops are open tomorrow. They're open.
I think they're croquettes.
Croquettes,
we don't have it in Germany.
But
it was really good and it goes to the northern, huh?
You like it?
Yeah.
Thank you. I see, but the new packaging we make now for the web shop is like this. I see these are the new, you see the new packagings now we try out. And for web shop we send it over like that. So, it's like that we do to our premium clients retail, but it's starting to work out.
It's also your premium meats that you put in socks. You need to vacuum it.
Oh yeah, when it cut up, we need to vacuum it. As I said, but then we clean it totally up and then we put it in vacuum. Yeah, it's like this. I don't know if it's still. You see that one. You see that it was a big one, but it's cleaned totally up. So the client, we try to have a good rollment. The moment you pass 12 days, vacuum packed tastes changes too much.
Yeah.
Really good packaging. Like what is it called, flat skin pack?
Skin pack. Yeah. We just have the machine for about a month and a half. Yes, and because it's so fast, it's better than vacuum pack. With vacuum, you make like a sort of with this, you have it much less because it goes so fast. But it was a big no problem, eh? You can stay in it.
we are counting through after every room.
So that was a little bit the tour of a production. The idea was when we made the butcher's book, the idea was to do three different things in the book. It's first, why do I do my profession and how do I do it, where I learn it from. Then I went to all my suppliers, so the farmers in France, in Belgium. We went with the camper for 7 days, having drinks, barbecue, and visiting my suppliers. Then we have some butcher recipes in it. It's a bit of everything. And then this is the new book with also some recipes from Carcass in it. Okay. So we translated it in English.
Perfect.
It's from butcher recipes to restaurant recipes. So Yeah.
Okay. I take one with your signature, please.
With?
With your signature.
With a signature, but I will read, put something in it. I always have signed some with my blood. I read my sign. I'll put something in it. Well, we did it in the beginning. I did with blood, not with my blood, but with poor blood. Yeah, I had the Flemish version, I had the French version, and now this one you just made especially in English because in the beginning my book, I wanted to translate it in German, and there was in the beginning it was interest. So it's about the book I made it about 7 years ago, and they didn't want to translate it in German. Why? Because there was pictures like this in it. So.
Yeah, but now they have books like that. In
maybe you need to. It's crazy because at that time they said, we don't want to confront the client or the people with a dead animal. I say you have to be transparent about it. You have to talk about it. So Germany and England, they didn't want to publish it. Just countries where they eat so much meat. It was crazy, eh?
For 5 years we make a book with the fatty crew and we the same.
Yeah. Yeah, but now it's more, but 7 years ago, it's like, 7 or 8 years ago, we made it. And we made the book with a very famous photographer that made the pictures. I'll show you this picture with my father and my son. I have to watch it. This one. So it's a very famous photographer. He lives here, but he does a lot of, he goes all over the world to do rock stars, and he always makes a very nice setting.
But it's not Stefan van Vleteren?
Stefan van Vleteren. Okay. So I made the book with him together. And these pictures are from the dead animals he made. So like in the morning, we slaughtered the animal, and then I took it to his studio. And the problem was, like with the dead animals, we were taking pictures the whole day because he's an artist, and he starts with the sun and goes down. So we were talking, and there's a lot of the talking is in the book. So it's that was nice. And then he started an exhibition with all dead animals after the book we made. So he made a special show about it. Yeah. What?
You also slaughter?
No, I don't slaughter. I can slaughter, but we don't slaughter ourselves. No.
Okay.
No.
Only for the book you did this.
Well, I went helping slaughtering, but it's not. It's especially that we kill the animal in the morning and then we put the head straight away to the studio, because it still have to feel the living part of it. The idea was to make pictures like a 17th century painting. You see a dead animal, but you appreciate it, what you have. So, I know how to slaughter, but I'm not fond of it. When you get too much use of slaughtering, I see that to a lot of guys that slaughter every day, they sort of, forget the aspect of killing something. We have to have respect for every piece of the animal, and these guys are, you know, maybe it's changed now, but slaughterers before, they could not be in a jury of a sentence in the Rechtbank. In Gericht, when somebody is killed, by example, of you have a jury of 12 people, they have to say, slaughterers, they never could be in a jury, because they slaughter every day and they forget a little bit
they don't have the sense for.
Yeah, they forget a little bit behind it.
And you have special slaughter that do it for you? Or
15 kilometers from here we have a slaughtering house. So we drive with the animals there.
They do it with your quality standard?
It's like when I buy my meat, like when they didn't kill the animal good, I can see it also. Yeah. So normally what we do, we go with the animal. It's there one night, so it stays there. And in the morning, the first ones, we let them kill. So they don't have to be in line waiting and don't get the stress out of it. But it's everywhere you buy, you have to, we have a sort of charter, And we always ask our the body, the big company grows, you cannot see it anymore. We ask them to sign this charter for to have the right way to treat the animal,
yeah,
to kill it the right way. We have a charter for our own that we made to have control of, to have a sort of protection also. Of course, you always go working with somebody that you trust, but you never know what's happened. Of course, I always say, when you have 20 animals in line waiting and one animal gets crazy, sometimes it had 3 weeks ago something at its foot or something, it stays a living animal and something can happen. And there's a lot of, animal rights groupments, and then they say, yeah, but you didn't treat the animal good. Yeah, it's a moment. A farmer or a slaughterer, if he doesn't treat the animals on the right way, he will not earn money. So there's a lot of manipulation on animals' rights groups and everything. I think every farmer, he only has, if he doesn't treat his animals good, he has a lot to lose. So,
The most for the activists and good people are crazy.
Let's say it's in everything the same. Extremist is never good. Yeah. So,
why you do you?
I used to skateboard a lot.
You do it yourself.
Yeah. And I stopped a little bit now. I got more scared. But about 3 years ago, I ordered a skate ramp for my garden for my son. But and they came with the skate ramp. And my wife, she said, half of our garden is in skate ramp now. So, I skate a little bit, and I just had fun. And about 7 years ago, I also made a snowboard once. So the guy that makes my my graphic. He said, yeah, you want a snowboard? I work for a snowboard brand. And I said, I only want it if my name is on it. So we made 25 snowboards. And now I made about 50 skateboards also for my son. But the idea is, like, there's a refugee center here in Koch City. And there's a lot of young people, and the idea is I give 25 boards to them for the kids with a good stuff, a partnership, so they can skateboard. So it's best of all for us. So
no.
But it's always, and people say to me, yeah, why you make skateboard? Why do this? Boys will be boys, eh? So
It's nice if you skateboard your own.
Yeah. So cool. Yeah. And it's another style now. We made it with an artist. So it's fun.